How did Dave go from nothing to building a $1.8 million a year laundromat empire on the side of his full-time job?
So the first year we were in business wasn't even quite a full calendar year. That was about $100,000.
Watch as we discover if laundromats are as passive and profitable as they say.
Basically, it's about a $1.2 million business.
Uncover the mindset that can make you a millionaire.
4 years of 90 to 100 hours a week, and she said, it's Christmas, what's wrong with you? And when I had that kind of aha moment, and I focused on those things, it absolutely changed my life.
And at last, access Dave's three fundamental steps to starting a successful laundromat business.
That's probably one of the more common things that people do that people don't want to hear. The people, the veterans that know how to do this really well, it's not a difficult thing to do.
All right, Dave, this place is massive, and for a laundromat, it is immaculate. Let's start with just giving us an overview on the scale of your operations. Give us, like, how many locations, vans, etc.
Yeah, so we have four locations here in the east side of Cincinnati. We have about 40 employees. We have a staff of entry-level employees that do laundry, things like that, delivery drivers. And then we have a leadership team of two assistant GMs and a general manager that runs the entire operation. We have about 250 machines across four locations. We have a fleet of four vans that are on the road every day doing our pickup and delivery business and things like that.
Gotcha, yeah, so you know, he knows what he's doing, right? This isn't a typical laundromat business owner.
For sure, no, it's
right?
Not.
And you've been in the business how long?
Since 2010, so almost 15 years.
So what inspired you to become an entrepreneur?
So I wanted to be an entrepreneur even as a young kid before I even knew what the word meant. I just wanted to own a business, and I mainly wanted to do it because I was attracted to the freedom and I could do what I believe I'm called here to do, which is serve my community, serve others.
So what did you do in a nutshell before, and then why the laundromat?
You know, when I was 19 years old, got out of high school, tried the community college route for a year, wasn't my thing. Got an opportunity at the local telephone company to get an entry-level position. As far as why I got in the laundromat business, I knew that that wasn't going to happen by me just quitting my job and buying a business for $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And so I needed something that could start as a side hustle.
I
don't
like
that term,
yeah.
But I needed something that could start that way. And what ended up happening is I found a local laundromat just a couple miles from home that was for sale for not a lot of money because it was a rundown mess. We paid $85,000
for
it. It was one of the few businesses that was what I call flexible. So I owned one laundromat, got it profitable, bought a second laundromat about a year later that was losing money, got that one profitable, and then about 3 years later, I quit my full-time job about 3 weeks before we were closing on our third location. And that was kind of the tipping point of, like, I can't do this anymore.
Right.
I had a young family, my wife had a career as a school teacher, and it was like, enough is enough, no more side hustle, I gotta jump.
Go all in.
All right, so we'll talk about buying the best equipment later on in the interview. I'm curious about the slick-looking self-serve machine. What does it cost these days in 2024? And how much revenue can it generate on a machine basis? What do you think?
Yeah, so these are 60-pound machines. These wash six loads of laundry at one time. It's about 10 pounds per load.
That's huge.
Kind of an industry standard. This machine costs about $12,000 ballpark. Probably generate about $150 a day.
A day?
In revenue in this location. Now, that's actually not our biggest machine.
Gotcha. Let's
take a look at these machines up here are 80-pound machines.
Whoa.
What we call our monster loaders. These will wash eight loads of laundry at one time. These run about $16,000 to purchase. And these generate about $200 to $250 a day in revenue. Now, when I say a revenue, that's self-serve. But as I mentioned, we have a pickup and delivery business. This machine probably generates about $400 a day in revenue because we generate as much money when we're closed to the public as when we're open.
Wow, so the $16,000 investment really is a small number compared to the big picture, right?
This laundromat is what I call fully optimized, meaning that we generate a lot of revenue from self-serve customers. We generate more revenue from people dropping off laundry at the counter that our team processes here,
mm-hmm.
but we generate the most amount of revenue per location for our pickup and delivery business. So this is not just a stereotypical self-serve laundromat. That is our core business, and that is our foundation. And then we built the wash, dry, fold, drop off laundry, pickup and delivery business, utilizing the same infrastructure, same equipment.
Gotcha.
So when it comes to business, you have your fixed cost, and then you have your variable cost. Once my fixed costs are covered, I can generate three times the revenue out of this location. I didn't have to buy this machine again. I just run it more often.
Mm-hmm.
And the beauty of this commercial equipment like this is it's built to run all day, every day.
Absolutely. All right, so you mentioned the other aspect of the business. We'll talk about that later, guys, so you understand really what the full business model looks like. Let's go and kind of look at the customer experience. So when they walk through the main door, mm-hmm. where do things start?
Yeah.
Yep. Let's talk about what it cost you to get going. So your startup costs and how did you found the capital to get going?
Yeah, our first location we acquired for $85,000. It was a rundown hot mess of a laundromat. It was unprofitable. When we first bought the laundromat, we had a net worth of about $30,000.
Yeah.
And that was cash we had saved up over the course of 3 or 4 years.
So you financed it, because $85,000 purchase, so you financed the balance?
Yeah, we got a small SBA loan. So the way the $30,000 went, that was liquid cash. We put about $15,000 down, took out a small business loan for $70,000.
Gotcha,
yeah. Bought the business, which was a mess. And the other $15,000 we used for improving the business. Mm-hmm. I call it putting lipstick on a pig.
Yeah.
We did a lot of sweat
to start
equity.
With, at
yeah.
least, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So what's your advice for someone that doesn't have a lot of cash to start with? You know, 500 to 1,000 bucks, mm-hmm. but they want to get into the laundromat business. They found one that's failing at 70 grand. Mm-hmm. With what you know now, how do we go about that and execute?
Yeah, there's a few different ways. I described what I did, which is an example. I mean, I started with zero. You can just save up the money, work overtime, sell your car. I mean, you can liquidate things. That's probably one of the more common things that people do that people don't want to hear is cut your lifestyle, sell your house, those type of things. Another one is bring on a business partner. There's a lot of business partners out there with the capital, and if you can prove to them that you're the right person to invest in, mm-hmm. they'll bring the briefcase,
good
so to
call.
Speak.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the middle is something like acquiring a laundromat that's a rundown mess. Sometimes you can acquire them with seller financing. That wasn't an option for this deal. Mm-hmm. But if you were to buy a laundromat for, say, $50,000 that's in a worse shape than the one I bought, and the owner owns it, and it's worth $50,000, but it's not financeable, then a lot of times you can talk them into seller financing.
I like that.
And
yeah.
even if it's short term,
there.
2 or 3 years, mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to pay it off in 2 or 3 years. You just get your foot in the door. You'd be surprised how different the industry will look at you from a leverage and risk standpoint if you are an owner versus a newbie. So just mm-hmm. figure out a way to get the business. The sooner you can make it profitable, the better. Sweat equity is a big part of that.
What would you say are the 3 fundamental steps to being successful in this specific business?
The location is number one. If you have a bad location, the best operator can't overcome it. Being able to buy the best equipment, knowing how to source that, how to find a great distributor is definitely number two.
Yeah.
And then when you find a great location, not overpaying for it.
You think that's easy to do?
It's not as easy as it sounds, but it's a knowledge and a mentorship kind of conversation. The people, the veterans that know how to do this really well, it's not a difficult thing to do. For a newbie, the most important thing you can do is not overpay for your location.
Interesting. Well, let's go check out the Kid Zone.
Sure.
As a father, I want to see what's going on there. Welcome to the Kid Zone.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see this a lot in laundromats, typically.
Yeah.
When you got this location opened up, was this the idea from the get-go, or did it kind of evolve?
In this space, when we acquired this real estate, it was a 9,000 square foot building. And so I was like, hey, we have a luxury here we don't have anywhere else. And there were many things we could do, for example, the width of the aisles and things mm-hmm. like that. But we get a lot of feedback. One of the things we really try to do in our business is focus on our ideal avatar. Which mm-hmm. is families with small children. We want to impact the world in that way, but we also just want to serve them. And of course, they have more laundry, so they're better customers, right?
Yeah.
And so if you provide an amazing place where kids want to go, a la the McDonald's Kid Zone, right? Then kids will tell their mom they want to come to Queen City Laundry.
So you have a full-time job, you have a family back in the day, you're running this business as a side hustle to get things going. How did you prevent yourself from burning out? What's your advice to other entrepreneurs who find themselves in a very similar situation?
Well, the truth is, I probably did push myself too far, and I don't recommend that, so learn from me. My young kids, it was a couple of years where they basically didn't see me.
Wow.
I worked 90 to 100 hours a week for 4 years.
You can't get Carla, that back.
My wife, was a school teacher. She had her own career, and she was a single mom.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we made that conscious decision as a family to go that hard, but the truth is, if I had pulled back, she would have been okay with that too.
Yeah, for sure. So what did those initial years look like? I'm curious if there's a highlight, a story, a learning opportunity for us, because those initial years, obviously, is a grind, right? And then maybe help us understand the year-over-year revenue, year 1, 5, 10 and 15 and so on.
Yeah, probably the craziest story I talk about in my book is Christmas morning. So we had owned a laundromats for 2.5 years. I had been working 90 to 100 hours a week. I had worked and slept.
Whoa.
And made sure I didn't miss birthdays, but that was it. Very strategic. Didn't matter what day of the week it was. And I woke up on Christmas morning at 5 a.m. and I get in the shower and I get my shower and I get out of the shower and I'm getting dressed to go to work. And Carla, who is asleep, my wife, she rolls over half asleep in bed and she says, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm getting ready for work."
You were so out of mode.
And she said, "It's Christmas, what's wrong with you?" Sorry, I might tear up a little because
aww.
that I'm sorry.
There's a funny note to it too, but I'm with you.
Sorry, I apologize. The truth is that I felt like a terrible husband and dad.
Mm.
And that was kind of a shock to my system. I was so deep, I didn't have an option but to keep going. So I couldn't change anything at that point.
Did you go to work that day?
Well, I was getting up and going to Cincinnati Bell, which I wasn't. I wasn't working on Christmas Day.
Right.
So her point was, the first time in 2.5 years you could sleep in. What are you doing?
Yeah.
But that's not how it came across to
me.
It came across to me very differently.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a traumatic day. You know, 4 years of 90 to 100 hours a week sounds a little crazy to say it out loud.
It is.
But when
crazy,
you live it, like, it's crazy to do on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got up and kept saying, "God, this is what God wants me to do." I believed it every day of my life. I still believe it.
Did you make any changes after that event on Christmas and realize,
honestly, we were where we were in our trajectory. I couldn't. I had to basically keep going for another year and a half. But that story will sit with me the rest of my life.
Now, as far as revenue, you know, transitioning all that hard work and all that sacrifice, what did that look like? You showed me the numbers a little bit, so let's start with year one.
Yeah. It
was roughly around $100,000, right? That first location.
Yep.
Give us the 5, 10, and 15 kind of projection.
Yeah, so the first year we were in business wasn't even quite a full calendar year. That was about $100,000.
Not bad.
About 5 years later, we were doing about $700,000 with two stores.
Mm-hmm.
Might have just acquired store 3 at that point. About 5 years later, we were about 1.2.
Cool.
Last year, we did about 1.8. And then this year, we're on path to go to 2.2.
Gotcha. And obviously, it's not because of just the machines and the locations, right? You've added other revenue streams like the full service.
Yes.
How much does that account for as far as business revenue?
Yeah, it's about 50%.
Wow.
If you count drop-off laundry, dry cleaning, which we do at a couple locations, and pickup and delivery, it's right at, it'll probably go over 50% this year.
Amazing, okay.
And that's where we think a lot of our growth is until we acquire another location, which we don't plan to do for the next 4 or 5 years.
Gotcha.
We expect to double our pickup and delivery volume in the next 3 years.
Gotcha. As far as profit margins, Dave, in this industry, what's like ideal? What are we shooting for?
Probably the highest profit margins in the business are around 40%. Pretty rare. Amazing operators, incredibly efficient operations.
Get to 50 maybe?
I don't know anybody that's gotten to 50. I'm not sure that it's possible.
Epic. Yeah.
I would say average operators can be in the high teens, low 20s, and the elite operators are 30, 35, 40.
Okay, awesome. All right, I am curious to go take a look at these machines with direct injection. I've never heard of that because we've done a laundry interview, but I don't think that was mentioned in that interview. What's unique is he is one of the only 5 locations in all of the country offering this technology. Give us a 101 overview on what the heck it is and what difference has it made.
Yeah, so the product is called Perfect Pour. It's an advanced level of direct injection. Behind the restrooms there, we have bulk cavities of washers and detergent and softener and things like that.
We'll show you guys the inside.
And it basically goes up overhead into a cavity, and the tubes come down in the machines.
See them
and
there.
And essentially the way that it works is when a customer comes up, they'll choose their product or service, and they'll hit next, and they'll choose dispense detergent, and it adds $1 to the cost. And if they want to dispense softener, it adds another $1 based on the size machine, and then they just pay.
So instead of bringing it myself,
mm-hmm.
I don't have to worry about it.
Yep. And so the idea behind it for us was kind of a 4-pronged approach. One of them is we can make $2 more for the same customer. The second is we can provide a higher level of experience. We want people to know that when they come to Queen City Laundry, we have things no one else has in the country.
Mm-hmm.
We are innovative in every way, shape, and form. Our reviews reflect that. Our team reflects that. We want our margins to reflect that. But that all circles back to the customer experience. And the good news is what we're seeing early on is our adoption already in the first, we've only had it for 4 months. Our early adoption is almost 40%. And what Hydro tells us is there's a couple laundromats that have had it for over a year and they're over 50% adoption. So when we extrapolate those numbers out, just from a customer experience perspective and a revenue perspective, we expect about a 2-year ROI.
Whoa. Yep. Looks like a computer CPU with a bunch of blood vessels or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
Why you, out of all the locations in the country that they've pursued or you pursued them and said, let's make this happen?
Yeah, it was a combination of
just
things.
Curious.
One of them is Hydro, the company that manufactures this, is local in Cincinnati.
Oh,
they're actually about 20 minutes from here.
Gotcha.
So that was a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is I'm kind of a thought leader in the industry. And so they approached us because they want to get awareness and they want me to tell people that it exists and
mm-hmm.
I use it and all that stuff. And then a big part of the reason that I reacted to it is because everything in our business model that we do, the this goes back to the optimization, is all around the future of the industry and bringing the future of the industry to today. I have the resources to do that. I have the team to manage the data because we're kind of collecting data from this. As importantly, we want to share that very authentically with the industry. And I'm not afraid, you know, there's risk when you're number five. There's risk in an
investment. It works or doesn't, right?
Yeah. And the one thing I told Hydro is that if it doesn't work and it's not a good investment, I mean, the thing you need to understand is I will tell the industry that too. So, like, I'm not going
to. They need your feedback to improve whatever they're doing.
And that's a big part of what we do at Queen City Laundry is we share with the industry because we're trying to drive the industry forward so that other laundromat owners in other parts of the country can serve their communities at a better, at a higher level.
What's your advice to pricing out services and making sure you're not undercutting yourself, you're not overpricing yourself, and kind of right there in the sweet spot?
The truth is, what I tell people to do is do a fair competitive analysis of you and your competitors and your local market for those services. Figure out where you stand as far as your overall value proposition, the value you deliver to the market, and then price accordingly.
What's the secret to acquiring great equipment and machines? This is kind of the piece of the puzzle of three things you need to be successful in this industry. So talk to us about new, old, what have you learned?
There's nothing wrong with used equipment. It can be a means to an end. But what I always tell people is, unless you're in a very, very small market with, you know, very little population density, you're probably not going to build a business model long-term around self-serve used equipment. It's just not typically viable. You really want to evolve as quickly as possible to the top of the industry when it comes to equipment. And once you get into the equipment side of it, I mean, there's roughly seven or eight different major manufacturers of equipment. And the key there is finding a rock star distributor. You find someone like that, that's 50% of the battle. Because the truth is, as a laundromat operator, it's very difficult to keep up with technology. It's very difficult to keep up with the changes in the industry and the controls of the machines and the efficiencies of the utilities and all these different things across manufacturers. It's not hard to keep up with one. It's hard to keep up with them all. But to know, am I buying today the best equipment versus 5 years ago, that's a very different conversation. You really need someone that does this all day, every day. Easier said than done. But if you can find and build a relationship, a deep-rooted relationship with an amazing rock star equipment distributor in your local market, they should be your eyes and ears.
Guys, as you're watching and learning a ton from what we're talking about today, I have a quick favor to ask. Take a second to like and subscribe. You're not only giving our team a pat in the back, but you're also helping us bring on more and more incredible guests like Dave. All right, Blitz time with Dave. Guys, thanks for submitting your questions as always. How many pounds of laundry do you do every day?
Oh goodness, across four locations with pickup and delivery, we do probably 10,000 pounds a day.
That's nuts. All right. What's a good and bad day for this laundromat, dollar-wise?
This location?
Yes.
A bad day is $5,000. A good day is $10,000.
All right. Man, a bad day is $5K. Not in my world. What's your most bizarre business encounter?
Having someone come into the laundromat to do their self-serve laundry. They brought laundry with them.
Yeah.
And they loaded the washer and proceeded to take off all of their clothes and put them in the washer and close the door. They started the machine and they came over and sat down at a table like this, maybe like in your seat.
With their undies?
Nothing on. And they thought that was completely normal.
Wow. Welcome to the laundromat business.
Yeah, we had to get the clothes back out for them.
What's the secret to a happy life?
Secret to a happy life is being fulfilled. Having a mission, chasing that mission is incredibly fulfilling.
What's the best part about being an entrepreneur?
The freedom.
What's the worst?
Stress.
And if you weren't in the laundromat business, what business would you be in?
This is all I know. I'm obsessed with this industry. I just can't imagine anything else. I honestly don't have an answer for you.
True laundromat entrepreneur right here. Nothing else needed to be said. Boom. All right, so this is your full service area of the laundromat.
Yep.
50% of the business.
Yep.
This is where it comes from.
Yep.
Okay. Before we show them the details of what happens here, the question I've been dying to ask you is the fact that a lot of people now have washers at their house. That technology is becoming cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. What's the future for laundromats look like? Why would somebody get into this business in the first place? Give us your insight, your perspective.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest misnomers in the industry, is that the laundromat industry is dying. So it's projected to grow from an $8 billion a year industry a few years
billion?
Ago, is what it was, to $50
billion. Wait, 50?
50,
yes. What?
And in the next 15 years. that's a pretty short span. And the reason why is all around the modernized laundromat, the optimized laundromat. So the reality is everyone in every community of society has a need for a laundromat. They may not know that, or there may not be a nice enough laundromat for them to justify using it. So what I always say is, if your washer dryer broke at home and you needed a modernized laundromat, but there wasn't one in your market, you wouldn't use it. You would let the laundry pile up. Mm-hmm. But if Queen City Laundry were a half a mile away from you, and it were a great experience for you, you wouldn't hesitate to come in here.
Yeah.
And so as our industry evolves and grows from more of a commodity mindset to a full service, serving the community mindset, we're serving more people better. And that stereotype of a rundown, nasty, dirty, dungy laundromat.
I don't want to throw my laundry in there.
Most people
no
don't.
Offense.
Most people don't. But would you hesitate to do your laundry
Absolutely
here?
Absolutely not.
Would you hesitate to drop it off here?
Especially with your ozone
sanitization. Absolutely.
I mean, it's like above and beyond.
So it's a compilation of all those things. Mm-hmm. If you think about the way we live as a society, we live in a full service economy. More and more every day, people are having their houses cleaned. Even middle class people are having their lawn cut. They're having their laundry done, and that's where we come in. So we offer the different levels of service. If you want to do it yourself in a modernized laundromat, that's one price point. Mm-hmm. If you want to drop it off over the counter, that's another price point. If you want to do full service, throw it on your porch, we'll come pick it up and bring it back to you the next day. It's a different price point. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, laundry pickup and delivery didn't exist. Mm. It's in every city and every market in the country now, and it's in its infancy.
What are some big misconceptions about laundromats that you want to just like totally destroy? I've got one. I've always thought it was like totally hands off.
Yeah.
I buy a laundromat and I just sit there and count the cash, baby.
Well,
is it so?
I won't lie. There are people that run their businesses that way, and that's everything that's wrong with our industry.
Interesting.
So the best operators and even average operators in the industry are laughing as they hear us discussing this. Because that is definitely number one, two, and three misconceptions. The other one is probably for me that only poor people use laundromats and the only thing poor people care about is price. 20% of our revenue comes from low-income customers.
It's
actually a pretty low amount in this business model.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to understand that I grew up very poor. So I remember the days when I was a young child, even though we didn't have much money, we didn't always make decisions based on only price. My mom would make decisions with my dad based on safety. They would make decisions based on cleanliness.
Yeah, I was gonna say cleanliness.
They would make decisions based on service. And this is back in the 70s and 80s, right? I think more so now today than ever before, people value service. They value relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Customer service tends to be kind of a lost art in a lot of ways. We're bringing it back.
So you've got more than 100 five-star reviews across four locations. I want to know more about what a great customer experience looks like for you, and then how do you actually get those reviews?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you ask for them?
I break that down into two things. The facility. So you have to build a facility that gives a great customer experience
for sure.
For the person.
You
have the
do.
Best team in the world. If you have a horrible facility, no proper layout, etc., old equipment, they're not going to have a great experience. But I believe the flip side is also true. So if you have a great facility and you don't have a great team with documented SOPs and a team that's focused on servitude and all the things that we've talked about that are important, that's a big part of it as well. So you have to be intentional with your team and your training, your empowerment, and all those things.
Are those reviews organic? People just left them without you asking for them? Or is there a process that you have in place where you ask for reviews, you follow through to make sure they leave one?
Yeah,
give us an insight.
I don't know what
that.
The percentage is, but I would argue the majority of our reviews we have intentionally asked for. So some of those would be examples of signs that my wife has made out in the store that have QR codes that say the biggest compliment you can give us is a review.
Yeah.
They scan the QR code, it goes right to our Google Business profile, and they leave a review. Make it as easy as possible for them.
Yes.
The other one is being more intentional digitally. We have our customers' phone numbers and email addresses that we collect, and we will send them text notifications, email notifications asking if they had a great experience, and if they did, would you leave us a review? The last thing is being very intentional in the way you train your team to ask for reviews. When you run a business at this level, every day your team is getting compliments from your customers.
Yeah.
And then we pay our team a bonus of $5 per review if their name is mentioned in a review.
That's awesome.
Those are all proactive things you can do.
Doing your laundry is a lot like managing your business's team. Do it right, and you get a clean, fresh-smelling business running smoothly. Do it wrong, and you lose your favorite T-shirt. Ugh. How you organize and manage your team has consequences. That's why there's Connect Team, the mobile-first employee management app designed for non-desk teams. It's the one-stop shop for all your business needs, saving you time and hassle. With Connect Teams Time Clock, teams can instantly clock in and out of the app, giving you a clear overview of who's working and where. Manage your absences, overtime, and PTO, and save time on payroll processing like never before. Need to manage your crew's schedule? Connect Teams scheduling feature lets you create and share schedules instantly. Adjustments are easy with a simple drag and drop. From composing custom forms to seeking real-time employee feedback from the field, Connect Teams digital forms and checklists keep you organized and ready to tackle incidents as soon as they occur.
Whoa.
With Connect Teams small business plan, teams of up to 10 employees can get access to all of the Connect Teams features for free, while bigger organizations get a 14-day free trial. What are you waiting for? Click the link below and open your free account today. All right, so this is where the full service basically area is designated for that. Mm-hmm. It was all full in the morning. Now the closed is all out for
all out
for delivery.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, on that note, like, what made you pick up or add pickup and delivery service, and what difference has it made in your business?
The reason that we did it is because I got to the point where we had a good business. It was profitable. It wasn't great, but it was solid. I knew I had all my fixed costs covered, and our fourth location that we had acquired had a lot of extra space. It was 5,400 square foot. The laundromat footprint was about 3,000 square feet. It just had like a couple thousand square foot of storage, and I didn't know what to do with it. And so I was trying to maximize the storage more than the facility. But part of the brainchild and the thesis around why I launched was I had spent millions of dollars of equipment, and it was turning 3, 4, 5, 6 times a day, and it's built to run 20 times a day. And my business model, wanting to really focus on, instead of location number 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. Mm-hmm. I wanted to figure out how can I make as much money as possible. And that was the time where I shifted into this optimization mentality.
So yeah, you're probably gonna go there. Yep.
Yeah.
And what has that done to the business? So it's basically what, open 24/7? Because you're not doing full service cleaning and laundry during normal, regular hours.
Very rarely. We do about 10% of our pickup and delivery laundry when the store is open to the public. But 90% of it's done overnight when the store is closed to the public.
Mm. How much staff is designated to do the full service?
Out of our 40 team members, so we have 7 delivery drivers at the moment, and we have 10 laundry processors, so roughly half.
Half of your business?
Yeah.
Half of your staff?
Yep.
That makes sense. Okay.
Yep.
Are the margins different on the full service as opposed to the self-serve?
Great question. When you launch the first few years, if you're really trying to scale and you're not focused on profitability, you're focused on capturing market share. Then it's very unprofitable because it's inefficient. The logistics aren't efficient.
Yeah.
You typically haven't figured out how to process laundry at scale. So you're processing a lot of laundry, but usually not making a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually the first year or two, depending on how quickly you want to scale. The other side of it is it's one of our more lucrative revenue streams now.
Once you've got the wheel spinning, everything is in motion.
Yeah. Yeah. Our self-serve stores generate around 32-33% profit. And our pickup and delivery is almost identical to that right now.
Not bad.
Now with scale, as we go from what we do right now to double and triple that volume over the next few years, which we plan to do, we think we can get those into the high 30s.
Well, let's go to the Mount Washington location, where in fact all the drop-off pickup delivery business started, right?
Yep.
A lot smaller than this?
Yeah, about half the size.
Half the size.
Not small, but
but where
small
it all
compared
began.
To this.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's take a drive.
All right.
All right. Well, welcome to the fourth location. Oops, sorry, Dave. So this is your fourth.
Yep.
This is where the delivery and pickup also started as well, right?
Yep.
Can you tell us a little bit about how this deal came about? Mm-hmm. Maybe share some numbers, the negotiation tactics, things like that.
Yeah, so the great thing about this is we already had a relationship with the property owner.
Mm-hmm.
They actually owned the real estate at one of our other locations. This store was run into the ground. It was a mess, like all 5 locations. They called us up and asked if we were interested in the space. We negotiated. I bought the place for $35,000.
$35,000.
At that point, this is our fourth location, so we just wrote a check for that.
Yeah.
We
awesome.
Acquired the store, borrowed about $500,000, put all new equipment in here.
Okay.
Everything you see today, basically, there is nothing in here you see that was here when we bought
it. What'd you pay $35,000 for?
Basically, the location.
The lease, essentially.
Pretty much, yeah.
Any key takeaways from negotiation, talking to seller, landlord, anything we can learn from?
Probably the best thing I would tell people is, you know, whenever you build a relationship with anyone in business, always nurture that relationship. One, it's good for your business. So
mm-hmm.
the people I bought the building, the business from, own the building. So they're my landlords.
I see. Right? So it's one of the same people.
Right.
Yeah.
So the people at our other location, our superstore, they owned that real estate. When that store went out of business, which was number five for us, they called me. And no one else even ever had a chance to acquire that real estate.
Wow. What is the secret to choosing the best location? And once I found it, identified it, what are some tips to make sure we don't overpay?
When it comes to finding a location, that's a lot about networking and things like that. You can even network with business brokers. They'll let you know when locations come available.
You don't need an existing laundromat to start, though, right?
You don't, but it's highly recommended because the infrastructure is so expensive.
I see.
So to give you an example, we did a lot of interior work in this space, but all the infrastructure is 30 years old. We've utilized all of the infrastructure still to this day.
Mm-hmm.
The drains, the plumbing, the water lines is all original.
Mm-hmm.
We put a little TLC into it, but this would cost you about $400,000 in just infrastructure.
Just the pipes?
To build out this space.
What?
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense why you're looking for something existing.
So you are, what I tell everybody I know in the industry is always look at the local market, how it's serving the community, and can you take a rundown laundromat and revitalize it. That's a much better business model.
Okay.
If you can't do that, or there aren't the right locations, they're not the right size, they're not in the right demographics, etc., mm-hmm. that's when building makes sense.
Okay. What about not overpaying? What are some key steps there?
Yeah, I think the most important thing there is just to understand the laws of supply and demand and your place in the market as you're acquiring the store and then also what you're turning it into. You're buying the business as it sits today. If you're buying it based on a multiple of net operating income, which is mm-hmm. not usually what you're buying in the laundromat industry, or you're just simply buying a location. Sometimes you're paying for infrastructure. So an example of that would be this space. I just threw $35,000 at him. It was a random number because that's what made him happy. And I just needed the location. I just needed the space. The potential of what I could turn it into was easily worth in the millions of dollars to me. So in the grand scheme of things, $35,000 was nothing.
Yeah.
I tell people to do competitive analysis on a regular basis to determine pricing, strategy, things like that as you operate a business.
Mm-hmm.
But the first time you should be doing competitive analysis is how does this store compete as it sits today? And how will it compete once you turn it into what you wanted to turn it into?
Yeah. Can you give us a quick breakdown of gross revenue per location? As it is today.
Yeah, so our three locations that don't serve pickup and delivery all generate around $250,000, $300,000 a year in gross revenue. Operating costs are about 70% of those. They're all at about a 30% margin.
Gotcha, that's pretty
good.
If that
makes sense.
Yeah.
And then our superstore, our biggest location where we do delivery out of, the majority of our dry cleaning, the majority of our drop-off laundry, basically is about a $1.2 million business.
What the operating costs look like on a monthly basis?
About $200,000. Oh, a year.
Annually. A year. Okay.
Annually.
Yeah. So, okay. Not bad. Do you ever think that you'd be where you are today in terms of like goal setting, you know, getting started, or you're like, not really? Does money make you happy as well?
The answer to your first question is not even close. Like if you had told me back in 2010, I'd be half where I am today, I might not have believed it. I was just trying to replace my salary.
Mm-hmm.
Never dreamed a million years that it would turn into what it has today.
You've certainly accomplished replacing your salary.
Yeah, we have for
doing
sure.
Doing well, good for you.
As far as happiness, I mean, I already had a great wife and a great life and great kids and all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I've always read, and I have found this to be true, is that money magnifies what you already are.
True, yeah.
Was I already very happy, very blessed? Absolutely. Has money given us a better life?
Absolutely.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. Starting now, you can take the guesswork, surprises, and costly mistakes out of the equation. We partnered with Dave Menz to give you the ultimate resource for building your laundromat business from scratch. I'm talking step-by-step blueprints that cover everything from finding your first laundromat all the way to negotiating the deal and counting up your coins. And that's not all. With the UpFlip Academy, you also have free access to expert coaches and other active entrepreneurs to help you build the business and lifestyle that you deserve. Visit UpFlip.com and join while you can. People have hyped up laundromats quite a bit, especially like it being a passive business. Buy one, hands off, you're good to go.
Yeah.
Are they as passive as they say? Or can they become?
They absolutely can become. I'm an example of that. I work about 2 hours a week in my businesses.
No way.
Yeah, so what I tell people is, but the business hasn't changed. My business is more complex than it was when I got into the industry. The only difference is I've reinvested a portion of my profits into a management team that operates the business.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm no longer the operator, I'm now the owner. It's the old work on your business, not in your business.
Gotcha, yeah.
So has the business changed? Is the business passive? No. Is the business passive for me as the owner? It is, because I have another operator. In fact, I have a team, an operations team that runs the businesses.
But this overnight journey has taken you 15 years,
yes,
right? So if you're out there thinking you can accomplish this in a year, is that possible? Yep. Is that really the goal too?
Absolutely. What I would tell people is that this business is flexible. I don't like the word passive.
What kind of metric can we use to measure the success of a laundromat?
Yeah, so we have three KPIs that we focus on as a business. And the first one is we want our customers to be happy. So we judge ourselves based on a metric of 95% or higher of 4- and 5-star reviews. And that's on a per location, that's on a pickup and delivery. If we fall below that, there's a panic and there's a problem. Mm-hmm. That's our floor. That's our first KPI. The second one is the company culture is very important to us. And I always said when I got into business for myself, my employees would enjoy their job. Now, working at a laundromat isn't exactly sexy and necessarily fun. So you have to bake that into the cake. But the truth is the way we measure our company culture, which is our second metric, is how does an employee feel at 7 o'clock at night on Sunday when they were off on Sunday, but they work on Monday? Mm-hmm. Because there was a time in my life, in my former career, when I was in my worst mood. And I don't ever want my employees to feel that way. My team, that's important to me. The third one is profitability. This is not a nonprofit. We are here to make a living. We want to reinvest in our business. We need the capital to do that. So we need to be profitable. And that gives us the opportunity to compensate our team really well, to reinvest in infrastructure, because this is a very capital intensive business.
For sure.
And the only way to do that is to be healthier financially. And so that's the number there.
Okay. What's the secret to scaling a laundromat business? Is it simply by just duplicating locations?
That is one way to scale. I don't think it's the most efficient way to scale. What I teach people to do and what we tell people to do is to optimize your current location before you acquire a second location. Now, optimization is a vague term. What I mean by that is you want to optimize your operations. You want to document your SOPs. You want to create an amazing team. You want to have great redundancies in place for when things go wrong, because they do. Most people don't have those things. They just figure out how to open the store and get some turns going.
Right. Yeah.
And then they go on to store number two, and they never truly optimize the operations of the team. And then the second one is optimizing your revenue streams. So things like full service laundry center, even cycle modifiers, which we can talk about, the ability to upcharge people on machines for more services. It's very important that people learn how to run and operate a laundromat before they try to scale. And I would argue 95% of the people that I see get it backwards. And by the way, I didn't follow this advice. I didn't know these things. When I got
now
the business,
you know, yeah.
I made the mistake of going from 1 to 4. And when I got to 4, I learned and I paused, and I still own 4, 6 years later.
I like that. Before you go and get another location, you ask yourself, hey, how else can I generate profits before I do anything else as far as the physical location, right?
And it's all through service. Find additional ways to serve people.
Yeah.
It's not just always bringing more customers in. Mm. It's how can I serve this customer better? And when I had that kind of aha moment and I focused on those things, it absolutely changed my life.
Dave, if I want to buy a laundromat today, what are the first 3 steps I need to take more specifically? And then the second fold question is, where should I start looking?
Yeah, the first thing you need to do is get your knowledge base down. Things like the Uplift Academy, courses, podcasts, things like that. That's where I recommend people start, because if you jump in too quick, you can really make some catastrophic mistakes. So I would say get a foundational knowledge. You're not going to know everything. You're not going to be perfect. You're not going to be an expert, but some things will jump out at you. That's the first thing. The second thing is, simultaneously while you're doing those things, begin networking. You can do virtual networking through, once again, academies and things like that, conferences, workshops. Then it's time for the meat and potatoes.
Yeah.
That's when you actually start looking at locations. For real estate investors out there, you know what I'm talking about by off-market deals. Off-market deals are probably 80% of the sales in our industry. We are not sophisticated. We do not have comps. We do not have...
You're not going to see a listing for a laundromat.
I mean, you could through a business broker, but that's not as percentage wise, it's not very common. But what you're going to do is I call it the journey. You're going to look at laundromats. Some of them will be listed with a broker for sale. Some of them are going to be off market deals. Those will come through networking and building relationships with equipment distributors. They will know of those deals and bring them to you if you let them know that you're interested
in
the industry.
Partners in that,
and then the last one is actually getting into the nitty gritty of looking at P&Ls and valuations and due diligence and financing and all the nitty gritty that takes to get the deal to the closing. And that's a process in and of itself that is much more of an art than a science.
Right.
In the real estate world, it can be relatively scientific. And in the laundromat world, it's mostly an art. And so you don't want to travel that journey alone.
Gotcha. As far as location for laundromats, where do they tend to do very well?
So it depends on your business model. So if you're looking at just a self-serve laundromat only, You're looking for demographics that are low income people, people that don't have washer dryers in their home. You're looking for people who will use this on a weekly, bi-weekly basis. They'll be in here every Tuesday at 3 o'clock to do their laundry. The second part of that is if you really seek to build what I call a full service laundry center, which is a core business of self-serve, along with all the other vertical integrations, what I always tell people is you could throw demographics out the window other than population density.
Interesting, okay.
Or if the more people there are, the more people you can serve. And with a good, better, best business model, I service every avatar that exists, from wealthy people to low-income people in government housing and everywhere in between, with one or two different services within our business model. Mm-hmm. And that's the optimization I've been talking about.
Gotcha. Yeah, I like the options that this business, this industry presents, either self-serve or like you have here, one-stop shop, basically. Yep. So I think one of the other misconceptions possibly for laundromat industries is like maybe that you're hiring just people like entry level, you pay them minimum wage.
Yeah.
So let me know if that's true or not. But that connects us to the other question, and that is what kind of qualities do you look for in staff and members and so on?
So when it comes to the minimum wage, there was a time where that was true. A big part of us growing the business and growing our margins and our profitability was understanding that wasn't good enough. So to give you an example, we have 40 employees. The least compensated employee makes $4 an hour above minimum wage. Minimum wage in Ohio is $10.10, and so they're making almost 50% over minimum wage.
Wow.
That's our least compensated employee. Our leadership team very well compensated. Company cars, company laptops, health insurance benefits, paid vacation, a lot of the things you don't see in a small business.
That's great.
Right? So if you want a high level of service and repeatable products and systems, you need to invest in your team. Right? We didn't do that and we couldn't afford it. We built a business model that could be baked into the cake.
Let's talk about partnerships. So you and your wife work in the business. Yeah. I'm curious how you guys handle disagreements when sometimes you see things differently. How do you come together? What's your advice on just working with partners in general?
We have very specific roles. So I am the passionate entrepreneur. I'm the operations person. She is more of the bookkeeper, accountant. And so we just kind of stay in our lanes. She handles all the finances. If I have a crazy idea that I want to do this or that, she tells me if we can afford it, and she hits the final call if that happens or not. Operationally, she knows to stay in her lane.
You set the expectations, and it's pretty clear. So you guys ever struggled with moments of like, what the heck did we get ourselves into? We can't make a decision now because she wants this, I want that.
Not really.
Partners and partnerships can lead to that, right?
Absolutely.
It's going to break the business or help it scale.
Yeah.
What do you say to that in general?
What I would tell people, it's important to assign a champion to each aspect of the business, and that champion gets the trump card. So they get final say.
Gotcha.
I think that's where most people get into those problems, is when they don't predetermine those things.
Okay. What role has mentorship specifically played in the business growth? What do you say to that?
Monumental. I give 50% of my success to my mentors. And there's a handful of them, but I think of one specifically, my mentor, Steve Millman. He was a second generation business owner. He owned the equipment distributorship when I got into the business. And if I hadn't known and met Steve Millman and the team at HM Company, and they hadn't mentored me through the first 5 to 10 years of my journey, I wouldn't have 50% of the success that I have now.
Wow.
He had 40 years of knowledge that I could tap into from a very functional, fundamental level. Like, how does this machine work and how do we fix it and how do we put credit card readers on them, to a attitude towards the business. So his dad had grown their business organically. He was an immigrant, and his dad had taught them that if they as an equipment distributor focus on our success, their success would follow.
Gotcha.
His dad used to tell him that money was just a way of keeping score of how well you're serving your customers. And I believe that already because of my faith. But Steve reinforced that in me on a daily basis, which is why we clicked so well.
But Dave, our viewers may say, mentorship's expensive. I don't have $5,000 to pay a mentor. Yeah. Or Dave, these mentors are busy. They're running their own businesses. If our viewers are running a particular business without a mentor, they need to get one today.
Yeah.
How do we go about it?
So as I mentioned earlier, I estimate that I had over 10,000 mentors in my life. Most of them don't know who I am. I invested in mentorships before I could afford to pay a coach $5,000.
I see.
You might pay $1,000, $2,000, $5,000, $10,000, but you're typically getting one-on-one access to the expert for them to really drill down on your specific questions. And the truth is, before I could afford to pay someone $5,000, I just invested in $1,000. And before I could invest in $1,000, I paid $100.
Yeah.
And before that, it was free content or $20 books.
Okay. Now, as part of the Upflip Academy, what are your thoughts on it? What benefits do you see our viewers getting by signing up? You've been in there. You're going to be part of it.
It's astronomical. Everything. I mean, my course is in the academy, and I'm honored to do that. But the truth is, I think it's fundamentally going to change entrepreneurialism. And the reason I say that is, I have a course, and you can purchase that course. But this is a membership where, for a fairly reasonable amount of money, you get access to dozens of courses.
And mentors, coaches.
Absolutely. And for the price point, for the access that you get, it may not be one-on-one coaching, but I just think the value is insane, which is why I'm excited to be a part of it.
Awesome. We are too. When it comes to suppliers and distributors, Dave, what are some obvious mistakes you can make as an operator of a laundromat, and maybe what are some tips to building really great, strong relationships for the long haul?
So about 50% of my success is based on the relationship I build with my equipment distributor. I would attribute another 20 or 25% of my success to the rock solid relationships I've built with service providers. This is plumbers, electricians, accountants, bankers, finance people, you name it, anyone that provides something to my business that I need. And my focus is always to find the win-win. So I want them to be focused on my success. And so therefore, what I give in return is I am focused on their success. So something that's not very popular that I share pretty openly is my equipment distributor. I've bought about $5 million in equipment from them over the years.
Whoa.
I've never once negotiated price. I could have talked them down on price, but I've never even tried to. That was me playing the long game. There are people that think I'm a fool for doing that. But I would attribute that approach to relationships as a big part of my success. I can call my plumber, I can call my electrician on the weekends for emergency calls, and they will send people out and provide levels of service to me that they won't provide to anyone else. Easier said than done. Can take a decade to build relationships like that, but they are bulletproof when you build them.
So when it comes to distributors, suppliers, obviously it's not always about getting the best price, right?
No,
sometimes you hear that, like, well, which distributor is gonna give you the best price, and that means your profits are higher. Well, not necessarily, guys, right? It's the relationship, you help them grow, they help you grow. That's a win-win.
And probably some entrepreneurs think I'm crazy, I hear it all the time, but it's a big part of our success, and I'm insanely passionate about that.
Cool.
I just think it's the right thing to do.
What is one piece of advice you'd like to leave our viewers with? Could be anything.
Yeah, one of my mentors told me a long time ago that if you just focus on serving the people, solving problems for your community, that the money will follow. That's easier said than done. Sometimes you got to watch the money, you got to watch your margins and all those things. But that's something I've really taken to heart, especially over the last 5 to 7 years. And since I've adopted that mentality, our business has just exploded. I always say I'm obsessed with serving people. And that's all I think about every day. And the money just follows.
Great. Thank you. Like in the laundromat business model, do you need more inspiration and practical advice? Well, episode 141 is one you cannot miss. See why for yourself. And don't forget to like and subscribe. Thank you for watching.